What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of Pound for Pound. I'm your co-host, Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
And the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
And guys, we are here in Las Vegas at the luxurious Fountain Blue.
Extremely luxurious, beautiful hotel.
And today, guys, we have a very special guest. See, that's right. I'm talking about the six-time division world champ, the Olympic gold medalist, the actor, the singer, the promoter, and part-time troll. I'm talking about Oscar De La Hoya. A Shot of Lime production.
We heard that album. We know you sing too.
Yeah, no, I can sing, but I can't act.
Have you been in a movie though?
No.
You've never done a movie?
Never did anything. No.
Never.
Never wanted to.
Those never commercials though, those boxing, those hype videos for the fights, you had to at least put it on.
Oh, yeah. No, I had to put it on. I did anything on TV, I did like McDonald's and freaking. Yeah. Coca-Cola and all that.
You gotta act, you gotta appeal to the kids. Bit, right? Yeah, it's a little bit. You know, before we even get started, I just want to say how excited I am, and how much, because obviously as fighters, we're gladiators who often die off and not really understand how appreciated, how loved we are. So, you know, from fighters, you know, to another fighter legend.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
We just want to say, we love you. We appreciate you. And we truly, your body of work inside and outside of the ring, no matter whatever anyone says, we appreciate it because we understand that.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. It means actually nobody has ever said that to me. Wow. I mean, it's crazy, right? It's been a crazy life. You know, it's been ever since the amateurs, when I was like 14, I started gaining like, you know, recognition in the hood. You know, I grew up in East LA, and I would make the newspaper, the local newspaper, like, oh, the Oscar De La Hoya from East LA wins Golden Gloves, or you know. But ever since then, it's been a crazy life, man. It's been up and down. It's been a fun ride. It's been a crazy life where, you know, you're dealing with just all sorts of people and issues, and it's when I fought and I retired and life changes, and you know, it's pretty crazy, but I'm here. Yeah.
You kind of fall into it too, Oscar, where your grandfather was a boxer.
Yeah.
Your dad was a boxer.
Right.
I mean, you started at the age of 5, 6, where you're like, hey, man, throw the gloves on to see what you got.
Yeah.
To eventually, it was almost like when I think of your story, I feel like there was a lot of pressure and there was somewhat of a hate-love relationship with the sport, but yet talent was able to take you because of the pressure that was kind of going, that you kind of had going into your life.
No, so I came out with this documentary on Max, I think it was HBO Max. We did a two-part documentary. And I told my story, you know, just how it was, what made me tick, you know? Because I'm, like, outside the ring, I'm just like a normal guy, you know, just whatever. You know, I can walk down the street and it's like, you just be cool, you know, whatever. And talk to anybody and just be nice, whatever. And, but inside the ring, it's a whole different story. Like something changes, you know that, you guys know that, right? And my ticking time bomb was my mother, you know, cause she used to beat the hell out of me. Like every day, like just beat the hell out of me for no reason. And so then my father was the type of person who was there to get me to the gym, and that's it. Like, he didn't know what school I went to. He didn't know what grades I got. He didn't know anything about me, right? He just made sure that you go to the gym every freaking day. If I try to miss a day, you know, probably beat the crap out of me. So it was that type of environment that I grew up in, but it actually helped me to stay out of trouble, because when I would go to the gym, I would let out my frustrations inside the ring. You know, I would literally think about my mom, and I mean, she would literally beat me every day with a freaking hanger or a belt, a hose, you know. So it's like you feel all that pain and you just want to let it out. So boxing to me was my best outlet.
I understand that. And you know, a big part of it, hearing your story and hearing you say that is psychological. I don't even think this is definitely not talked about enough, is how much that plays an effect psychologically.
Oh yeah.
When it's, because it's usually, especially as a boy, as a man, as a young man growing up, it's the father that has to restore that order, that has to keep you in check in a certain type of way, because I'm the king of this house. You're going to grow up to understand hierarchy. One day you will be the king of your own house, but in this house, I'm the king of this house.
Yeah.
And it's your mother who is supposed to be the nurturing one,
yeah,
who's supposed to coddle you, who's supposed to pick you up when you're down, who's supposed to give you that affection and that love. Not to say that the father is not supposed to give that affection as well, but in most cases, that father gives that affection a different way. Like your father making sure you don't miss a day at the
right.
gym.
Yeah.
That's part of his job.
Sure.
Making sure that you understand that this is hierarchy. This is how you have to behave before you become the boss of your own
yeah.
kingdom. And I can't even imagine psychologically
ooh.
What effect that had
yeah.
on you growing up.
Yeah, it was like this, it was this anger building inside, you know, just never understanding like why, why, what did I do wrong? What am I doing? You know, it's.
And at that point, Oscar, was it you felt pinpointed? Was it the same for your brothers and sister?
No, it was just me. Yeah, it was just me. I didn't understand why. Like, I have a younger sister and an older brother. So
you're the middle child.
Yeah, I'm the middle child, you know. And so she kind of kept it. She would keep it quiet from everybody else. Like, when my sister saw the documentary, she was like, why are you talking like that about our mom? I go, okay, well, she doesn't know.
Yeah,
she just, nobody knew, you know. My older brother didn't know. My father didn't know. So it was like, I almost, when I was growing up, I always thought, well, maybe they planned it out, you know. Maybe, you know, I was born to be a fighter and they're going to mold me into this beast, you know. And so my father's going to keep me in line and my mom's just going to terrorize me so I can just be tough, you know. And that's how I grew up. And luckily I did have boxing, because I would have probably been in jail. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in the hood, in the neighborhood. I mean, across the street, I had all my friends were all gangsters, crackheads, you know, and I would wake up in the morning, like at 10 years old, at 6 a.m. in the morning to go run.
Yeah.
And I would see them, you know, they would wave everything, whatever. But I would probably end up like that if I didn't have that tough love, you know?
Yeah, so do you feel, Oscar, because, it's crazy, man. I watched your documentary. Like, I watched the Shaq one, and then right after that, like, yours came out. And I'm just like, man, the Shaq one was good. And then I watched the De La Hoya one. I'm like, holy shit, I thought I knew everything about Oscar De La Hoya. I've seen all your 30 for 30s, the ESPN stuff, like, just everything. But when you talked about your mom putting you in a dress, when you talked about your mom... You know, as you just mentioned, the way that the beatings took over.
Yeah, yeah.
When you won the Olympics in 92 and everybody came up with the narrative that, like, he did it for his mother.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you were able to kind of went along with it.
Sure.
But then you're almost like you were able to develop a storyline, a relationship with
right.
her, even though she was gone. Like,
yeah,
you know what?
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, I'm just like, what the hell? Like, this is why, like, when the documentary came out, Oscar, I'm like, Oscar, you got a pair of fucking balls
yeah.
to be able to tell the truth like that.
Yeah.
And I could tell, Oscar, there's a bit of relief.
Oh, yeah.
From this. Like, yeah. how much of that weight has actually, like, come off?
Well, yeah, it was always, I always felt embarrassed, you know? Especially when, you know, all that shit came out with the pictures and this and that. You can cuss here, right? That's all good?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You know, the pictures back, 15 years ago, I think it was. It's like, man, like, life had to be freaking twisted, you know, when I was fighting. And so now I understand everything, especially after watching the documentary, the way it was put together. I was like, shit, man, this guy's a genius. This director's a genius because he exactly knew how to pinpoint what the problem, what the issue was. And the issue I thought was me all the time, and it wasn't me, yeah. You know? I was just trying to be a kid. Yeah. And I just had tough parents, that's it, you know?
Yeah, it's, and you just did just speak a little bit about you being the middle child.
Yeah.
And often, I was a middle child for a long time until my sister came. But often you feel there's a void there because when you have the oldest, is there's this a lot of responsibility being placed on the oldest. Like, hey, this is what the family does. So you have to step in line because you're going to take over control. And then that oldest at some point can choose that, you know what? No, I don't want to do that. Or, okay, I'm going to go along with it. And they take on that responsibility. But they're looked, both mom and dad are looking at that oldest as you're, okay, you have to take on that responsibility. And then you got the youngest who, oh, that's the baby. We got to make sure she's good. Oh, she's taken care of. We can't, you know, here, everything you need here. This is the baby. This is the baby. This is the baby. And then that middle child, often you just feel like, who's going to give me attention? Right, like, exactly. Who's going to give me attention?
You almost feel like invincible.
Yes.
And that's why I think boxing was my escape, was my outlet, you know? Like, every time I would go to the gym, I would be happy. I would be in a happy place. It was the only place I can be happy in, you know? Not even school, when I was with friends in elementary or junior high.
You just thought about boxing.
It was all boxing. It was all boxing.
Something that you found, that you chose, and that you were in.
It was my love.
I couldn't
get love from anywhere else, so I got love from boxing.
I mean, I almost feel like you got it from like different ends, from your father that wanted you to overexceed, to your, you know, I guess we could call the spade, man, the abuse of your mother, but also even as a kid, man, like, you know, you're molested as a little kid. You know what I mean? You talked about it, because I remember when me and you were, you know, with Tyson, even Tyson happened to the same thing. It's almost like part of your innocence at a very young age was ripped out of you, man.
Yeah. You don't really understand it when you're a kid, you know? It's like, okay.
It's like shame, embarrassment, a little bit of...
You start to understand it as an adult, you know? It's crazy. It's pretty crazy. Or you want to... I mean, if you have the balls to speak about it, then you talk about it, but as an adult. You never do it as a kid, you know? Because it's like, man, what are they going to think of me? You know, I'm scared, you know? I feel ashamed. But now that documentary literally opened up a whole different world for me, you know? Yeah. It, like, made me understand, like, dude, you were in a bad case.
It's almost like this, Oscar. It's almost like you are, and not necessarily that you play the victim role, but you're almost a victim of not just your parents, but your parents' past and past. And it's just a cycle that kind of goes through that, unfortunately, it had to go through you.
Yeah.
You think that's played in effect? Obviously, Oscar, I've seen your documentary. Again, man, I'm just quoting it because I don't want to be pinpointing and judging you or anything like that.
Yeah.
But even you as a father, man.
Yeah.
I mean, how much has that played that role of you literally trying to be the best version that you could be, but you never had that figure to be like, hey, this is what it's like being a dad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never hit my kids, never laid a hand on them, all six of them, because of my past, you know? And that's a great thing, obviously, right? You know, because growing up, you know, the discipline we got and this and that. So I never touched my kids, never laid a hand on them, never, you know, you raise your voice a little bit. Hey, you know, what are you doing? Go pick that up, whatever. But that's about it. That's where I draw the line, right? And that's where I try to break the cycle. So with this generation, it's like it's, you know, the curse is cured. It's, you know, I'm cured, right? But yeah, would I like to be a better father? Absolutely. You can always be a better father. You know, you can always, do I know how? No, because I was never taught, but I do my best and that's all you can do, you know?
Yeah. I think that's really interesting that you say that because it's, your father, the generation before you and the generation before them and the generation before them. Who wrote the handbook on how to be the best father?
Shit, nobody gave me a handbook, man.
No one wrote that handbook. And like you just mentioned, we're kind of living in the age now of such enlightenment, to where it's, you can look back at the past and say, yeah, those were mistakes, or this or that, this was this, this was that, I don't want that, I don't like that, I want to change that, and actually speak about it. Mm-hmm. And just before we even go, I just want to say thank you for even, you know, being open like that, able to shoot that, because we understand.
I think everybody understands.
The pressure. Yeah, but it's there's a different right. level when we do what we do.
Sure.
And not even to your caliber. There's a different level when you become the pinnacle of the sport. Because sports change lives. Right. Like, it's something that people all resonate with. So when you become the pinnacle of it and a champion, and then you have this persona and this that you have to live up to.
Yeah.
You know, you were deemed the golden boy. You came back with a medal and then you were the golden boy.
Yeah.
That's for your mom. So now it's like, oh, I got to live up to this. And you're carrying that each. Wow.
Wow. Where's yours? Where's yours?
I took Henry's Oscar.
We've seen Henry.
Can I see that Oscar?
I mean, it's a replica, but
yeah.
No, but you know what's crazy about this too, Oscar? I remember you as a promoter. Now you had given this to Bob Arum.
Yeah,
you know, you had given it to him. And obviously, you had.
Wait, is that crazy? I mean, going back to like everything we're talking about, right? Yeah. Like, when I won the gold medal, you know, the story was I did it for my mom, you know, and that was the whole narrative, right? That was like, I mean, media made it up, actually.
And you just went with it.
Well, I went with it because it's like,
kid. Okay.
And then this is how, and then this is that thing, this is how I become successful.
Right.
This is how I get out of the hood.
Sure, sure.
This is how I make money.
You just go with it. And what's crazy was, I don't know, it's like when I gave that gold medal to Bob, like, I didn't mind, like, parting ways with it. I didn't, you know, like, it was like, okay, did I win it for my mom?
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I don't know, it was like a double-edged sword, you know, because everybody, the world's saying I won it for my mom, but I really didn't, you know? It's like, I did it for me. Yeah. Fuck, what about me, right?
But it's one of those things that where it's, you see an avenue, and they paint the picture. And obviously, you know, they touch on it in the doc a little bit, where, you know, now you got a publicist.
Right.
You know, now we have to mold this. We have to find a market to market you, mm-hmm. to tap you.
Oh, yeah.
So at this point, you got to be the sport. You got to be a good sport. You got to run with the narrative. You got to run. This is what's going to get you there. And then, of course, us all being young men growing up and starting to excel in something and then get some recognition in it. You know, when the lady starts, you know, oh, he's so great, he's so nice, he's so, oh shit, I'm gonna keep running with this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the chicks love me.
Oh, and why I ran, not? Baby. Yeah. I ran, man. Trust me, I ran.
Hey, come on, man. Hey. Let's take a little break.
You're almost a prisoner of it.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't, it's, what do I do? Like, what, I'm just gonna, and then at that age too, we're not in this point now of enlightenment to where you can look back on mm-hmm. your life.
Right.
No, at that age, it's like, oh shit, I can't say anything because I want to keep getting this money.
Oh yeah.
I want to be able to take care of my family,
right.
my dad, I want to buy them a house. Mm-hmm. I want,
sure.
because that's the symbol of what we see as success.
Yeah.
But then we're living a lie.
Oh man, it's all a lie. It was a deep lie too. Because everything that, like, I'm being successful and winning and this and that, and it's off of a lie, basically. It's not, I mean, yeah, in a way I was motivated to do it for my mom, and you know, but the storyline was just like,
it was too good for you not to tell it.
Yeah, she wasn't like passing away in her deathbed, and I said, oh, I'm gonna do it for you, mom. It wasn't like that. No,
but how powerful, though. It's like a boulder rolling down the hill. Once this gets going, it's almost impossible, man, to stop.
There's no stopping it.
But how powerful was that motivate? Because it is, yes, as untrue as it was, that's a motivator too.
Oh yeah,
knowing that, oh shit, this is
right.
Yeah, it might be a lie in my head, but shit, I gotta do it for my mom.
Oh yeah,
I gotta, you know, I gotta win these fights. That which means more money, more publicity.
Oh, yeah.
More of the story.
Well, then think about, I mean, again, double-edged sword. I'm thinking that, but I'm also thinking, man, I fucking hate her. I fucking hate her because she beat the hell out of me every day. You know, so the struggle that I had every day, man, the struggle, because I was reminded who I was. I was reminded about the gold medal. I was reminded about my mom every day.
So every time you thought of success, every time you thought of that, you thought about the abuse of your mother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And for some strange reason, it drove me to do even better.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's fucking twisted.
You continue the storyline. Yeah, like Oscar, I mean, I think my biggest question is, obviously, have you forgiven her?
Yeah, yeah. I did.
Yeah.
When we were talking about doing shrooms. I did shrooms one time, like with a shaman and all that. And so she was asking me questions. And this was only like 5-6 years ago. She was asking me questions, the shaman, like what I want to talk about. I go, well, I have to release this pain, you know, that I have with my mom. And, you know, what else was it? I think it was, I wanted to talk about me as a little kid as well. So I take the shrooms. And so then we're sitting down and I close my eyes. And then all of a sudden she starts talking about my mom. And I start remembering. It was odd because I turned into like water. Like it was weird. I was water. Like, I don't know what it was water where, and I dove into the ocean and I was going down, 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 like thousands of feet, just down, just going. And then I stopped and I felt, you feel it. Like I saw my mom. It was crazy. I saw my mom. And right there and then, I felt this relief of like just as if I just
like died.
Right? It was
like, it's like you're dead, but you're alive.
Yeah, but then you live. You're alive, you know, and you leave everything, the past, everything. It's like you leave it there, and then you come back up, and you're. It was pretty crazy, pretty intense.
Yeah. I had an experience like that too, Oscar. I know me and Tyson try to get you to do the toad with us.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'm still game, bro. So.
Yeah. I'm gonna tell Mike.
I'm still game, man. I'm telling
but,
you.
But I remember like true forgiveness for me whenever it is that I did the toad with Tyson.
Yeah.
It true forgiveness is compassion. True forgiveness is me saying, Mom, I see your past,
sure,
and I know what happened to you, and then it's also like forgive me for judging you,
sure,
like you know what I'm saying. Forgive me not seeing, for not putting myself in your situation, and not knowing the past and the trauma that you have gone to, that it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, like, you feel sorry.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. So it's almost like you wake up out of it. You're like, dude, forgive me for judging you. Like, forgive me.
Yeah, for not understanding what you went through.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, I've been through it all, man. It's been a crazy roller coaster, but I those shrooms that I took literally changed my life. It changed the outlook on everything, you know, that I do. Just how I think. You know. I never judge. I don't, it's like we're all human. We all make mistakes, but there's no like bad intention, you know, for me and everything. You know, it's like I just live life, man. That's it. I appreciate life and I love life and I finally feel free for the first time. Yeah,
I feel it when you walked in. It's I'm a big believer. I really care about this spirit and the energy of someone that I'm around.
Yeah.
When I'm around someone, I can feel their energy when it's enclosed and it's standoffish and it's away. I feel energies that feel liberated. And for someone as big as you are, someone that was as big as you were at one point, you know, there's people that I meet that might have not even been on your level to where now they're still guarded like that.
Oh yeah.
To where when you walk in, I feel this spirit, I feel this weight lifted off to where it's, you feel that you can finally be free to live the way that you want to live.
I don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah,
because that's the bottom line.
Yeah, you get one, like, literally, one life.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Before it was like, oh man, I gotta be careful because, or look, I can't talk this way. People are gonna judge me. what are they gonna think of me? This, no, fuck that. I'm like over that. I'm living life. I live it good.
Yes.
You know, I live it responsible now. It's like it's not that it's a different me. It's just a me that is free.
Yeah. You know? And there's a balance too. There's a difference between, because with the power that you had, you had a responsibility as well.
Sure.
Because with that power, you had a responsibility to show us young boys and girls growing up.
Yeah, not just that, yeah, but then yeah. look at what's on the sideline.
Yes, and
when
with
you're
that,
a gold medalist, when, you're a fucking man. Hero, dude.
Yeah,
yeah.
With that, time, you had a time. Responsibility, which
sure.
In most cases, we don't ask for this responsibility. No. We're just trying to improve our circumstances.
Right.
But then you hit a place where it's like you're a larger than life figure to where you have that responsibility to show us that, hey, I don't need to be in the streets. I don't need to do this. I didn't need to do this, but especially at that age, that I can work as hard as I can to achieve something so great. But at the same time, and this is the battle too. This is still the battle.
Oh, yeah.
Finding that.
Oh, if you don't find it,
you have that responsibility, and you're taking care of it,
right.
With respect to it.
Yeah.
But you're still living as a human being
because
you have you have a life as well.
Well, I always think about this. You take a look at all these like celebrities, right, that take their lives. You know.
Yeah.
Why? And we're talking like huge names. We're talking like successful people. We're talking about iconic figures, you know, taking their life. Why? They didn't find themselves. They didn't, you know, they were drowned in their success, basically.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like they think their success is just their purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's life to live, man.
Yeah.
And so with me now, you know, a big thing for me was like pleasing everybody, right?
Of course.
Oh, man. Oh, yes.
Golden boy.
Yes, sir. Yes, man. You know, now it's like, go fuck yourself. I take care of myself. I take care of my loved ones.
Of course.
You know, that's my responsibility now. Like my responsibility as a gold medalist, when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, I got to be the best role model I can be. And, but I forgot about me. I forgot about me all these years. Like, shit, what about me? The way you said earlier. And so now it's like me or hate me, this is who I am, you know, and life goes on.
Yeah. And I can tell you too, Oscar, I think the first time that you really started going through that experience is when you fought Julio Cesar Chavez. You know, you're the golden boy, the clean cut dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you had girls throwing their bras, their thongs at you.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're going up against, quote unquote, a real Mexican.
Yeah.
People need to understand there's a Mexican American, and you know this because I go through this shit all the time.
I'm the gringo.
Yeah, you're the gringo.
I was the gringo.
But if you say you're a gringo, then you're not Mexican. If you say you're Mexican, you're a gringo. Like it's
crazy.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
But I remember watching because that was the prime years as being a Mexican American. Like every time that Oscar fought, we were watching that fight.
Well, you have no identity.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I was from here or from there. Like, where am I from? The fuck am I? Hispanic, like
and you can't lean too much this way because these people they'll let you know right away. You're Mexican.
Oh yeah,
you're not from here.
So it's funny because I've always preached and said, look, yeah, I was born here in the U.S. I'm American. I'm like, you know, but I'm proud of my roots.
Yeah,
I'm proud of my Mexican heritage. You know, I mean, my father, my mother was born out there, and. I practically lived out there for a long time. We would go every summer, you know, and so to visit the family. But when I fought Chavez, who was the real Mexican, you know, Mexican
and
national.
Yeah, and it's true.
Ooh, man, I'm telling you, I had everybody against me. I had, one of my uncles was like pissed off at me that I beat him. What are you doing? You're beating my hero, man. Like, dude, I'm your nephew, man. Come on.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it was crazy.
And in those fights too, especially in the second one, in those fights too there's this dog that's inside of, you know, the elite fighter.
Oh, yeah.
There's a dog that's inside of us to where whatever trauma that we might have been through, whatever it was that's fueling us, we almost we almost grow bigger than that inside.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And there's this snarl that you do. Obviously, you know the famous Mexican fighters. They're just hard nosed. They're in there, and it's a fight to the death.
Oh, there's a lot of anger in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of anger. You have this one where it's almost like you look like you're out of it. It's like this glazed look on your face.
Yeah.
And you're in there, and especially in that second when you had something to prove. It was like, motherfucker, I'm not taking a step back. I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is every moment I had like that, and I can pinpoint it in every fight. Yeah. I love watching my fights and watching everybody else's fights. But I love seeing my eyes. And when I'm in that moment locked in, I'm so fucking angry, you know? And it's because of the past, all that crap. And I can see it. I can say, oh, shit, there he goes. There's that fucking animal that's going to come out. And I can see it. And sure enough, man, it's like before, like 10 years ago, I would break down and cry and fucking just like, you know, just feel sorry for myself. But now it's like I see it and it's like I just laugh now. Like, shit, man, that's so tough times. I'm glad that I survived it, you know, because I could have easily done anything to myself, you know. I'm a coward, but I would never do anything. But it's like I always had that mentality, like, I don't want to be here, you know. This life is too tough. I can't handle it, you know.
Yeah, think of everything that's happened to you, Oscar, from being the legend in Julio Cesar Chavez to losing that controversial loss to Trinidad, to going, you know, to being the first one to ever become a sixth division champion in boxing history, unless I'm wrong here.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
you know, to having stardom, dude. When did that really switch for you? Say, you know what? Because I feel like as a boxer, you're always, and this is something like, because you've had a big impact, like in particularly every Mexican American that's in combat sports is like, you know, it's like, no, like it was a great fight. You know, he won, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
But in reality is there's always somewhat of a rebel in you. You know what I'm saying? Like I feel like recently that was kind of unleashed, because now we have Oscar, the promoter, but also the troll. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Dude, when Raleigh did, I was laughing, dude.
Again, look, I mean, look.
And it happened late. And you know what, Oscar? Can I say you something?
Yeah.
I'm kind of happy that I found it a little bit earlier. Because, you know, we talked about it. It's like, man, I remember you were telling Tyson. It's like, you know what this motherfucker is? You're pointing at me. This motherfucker is hilarious. But it's almost like, I don't want to please anybody. I know what that feels like.
Sure.
I know the responsibility. But that's not me.
Right. Yeah.
That's
and
not
you found
me.
It early, yeah.
And I found it early, man.
Which is great, man. But it's like, I said, today, I don't, if you're going to talk shit about me, well, guess what? I'm going to talk shit about you too. Yeah. But I'm never going to, if it's an athlete, like a fighter, I'm never going to talk shit about you, like in your personal life or, you know, I'm going to critique you.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was Rollies who fought Pitbull.
Yes, just fought Pitbull.
I did a video. I was just laughing. It was hilarious, right?
You and I,
and me and Bernard, but I would never attack you personally because it hurts.
Yeah.
You know, when you get attacked, and I know that. But if you're gonna talk shit about me, I'm gonna critique. You know, who you are inside the ring.
Yeah, you're.
Because I have the right to. It's
like, yeah, you're gold standard.
Right, like shit. You know, you fight like this, you fight like that. I mean, you know, it's not my style, and I'm going to critique you. That's it.
But you're also a promoter now, too. So part of you also, because you know what? We're part of the UFC. Dana White, and we're just talking with them.
We got to ask. We got to bring it up.
Sure.
What is the, like, you know, I don't want to steal your question, but.
No. You're good. The only thing I'm saying is you as a promoter, you sometimes these fighters, they don't fucking sell a fight. Like, you know what I'm saying? And there's one thing where the UFC's really taking off and really now it's kind of lapping boxing, unfortunately, is because there's storylines involved. And I'm still not too sure if these fucking boxers get it. It pisses me off a little bit because one of the oldest and toughest sports, and I even put it above mixed martial arts, is the sport of boxing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, boxing at one point was the number one sport in the world. You know, It was. It was just you. Everybody watched boxing. It was, and why? Because the best fought the best.
True.
And that's what the UFC does. I mean, you guys fight the best. You guys, and there's a storyline, and it's a machine. You know,
because it's all under one umbrella.
Sure. And look, with boxing, we have right now what maybe three big promoters. You know. There's myself, there's Matchroom, and then there's Top Rank. And PBC, yeah.
PBC, yes.
PBC, yeah, there's four big ones. It's like, it's so fragmented, you know? And so promoters have to try to work with each other, and the fighters, you know, it's all a big mess.
Yeah.
And therefore we don't get the big fights that we want to see. One thing that I'm trying to do is beat the drum and tell all these promoters, hey, let's work together. Let's just work together. Leave your ego at home and let's make these fights happen. And we've seen them in the past now on a regular basis. I got to keep beating that drum, man, because this sport, I love this sport, man. I love boxing, man. I love boxing, and I respect. Actually, I have to be honest. At first, I didn't really understand MMA.
Yeah.
Because I saw, I'm talking about way back in the day. I didn't really like the striking and this and that, and you know, and the grappling, and I critiqued it a bit. You know, I was like, I'll stick to boxing. Yeah. I didn't talk shit about it. I just like critiqued it.
Yeah.
And but now it's like the way it's evolved, the way you guys fight, and the way you stand up, and you know, it's like an art, man. It's a fucking art. So I respect it a lot, you know. And so that's the one thing about the UFC is that everything's under one umbrella, like you said.
Yeah.
And the best is fighting the best. That's the bottom line, and people love it.
Yes. Yeah,
and that's what boxing should be.
Speaking of that, and going to back what you were saying earlier,
No, I wasn't going to bring it up.
Where, yeah, you were going to stop it. You were going to bring it up. You called him a troll.
Talk to me.
So let's
come on. Come on.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it, Oscar, because
we're
in a time where you changed the game. You decided, I'm going to promote myself.
Yeah.
And you became one of the biggest boxing promoters ever.
Yeah.
And what I don't understand is, where does this beef, this underlining, whether it's beef or whether it's the disdain for each other, comes from? Because Dana White is the best mixed martial arts promoter ever. And you are arguably the best boxing promoter ever. So where does this disdain for each other come from?
Yeah.
Because I believe you two are, by being the best, the best respects the best. And we work together in some way.
You know what? I know where it comes from. I think when Conor McGregor got made,
yes,
I critiqued it a bit. I was like, that's not going to be a real fight. I mean, what is it, an exhibition, this and that? Yeah. I didn't really know too much about what was going on, you know? Yeah. I don't know if it was an exhibition or a real fight, but I didn't understand it, so I critiqued it. And then Dana White obviously comes and defends, you know, the UFC, and rightfully so, right? And then we went at it a couple of times, whatever, but yeah, I think I made the mistake of critiquing it because I didn't understand the sport in the beginning, you know? And I'm not going to sit down right here and apologize because I'm just not.
Yeah, because he does it too.
Yeah, but it's like it was just my opinion and I critiqued it and I didn't understand, but I have no beef with him.
You respect him as a promoter.
Yeah, I respect him. That's it. That's what he's doing in the UFC.
Yes,
is commendable. It really is. I mean, shit. I wish boxing was like that.
Yeah.
I wish boxing was under one roof. Imagine boxing being under one roof.
Okay, Oscar.
Wow. Take off.
Oscar, how do you fix boxing? The reason why I bring that up is because you're right. The best ain't fighting the best.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you one prime example: Canelo Alvarez doesn't want to fight as mandatory and David Benavidez.
Sure.
Like, what the fuck? Like, Like, that's going to tarnish his legacy. When you talk about the Mexican fighters who are on Mount Rushmore, I almost feel like taking Canelo out. Mm. Like, I really do, because you know what?
Come on. That's crazy.
No, you have.
That's crazy. You can't do that. You can't do that.
You know, you know more of it, but when you have a guy like Julio Cesar Chavez, to me, in my eyes, that dude fought everybody. Oscar De La Hoya, he fought Bernard Hopkins, he fought Felix Stern, he fought I Corte, Vargas, Mosley twice. I mean, Manny Pacquiao, he fought his generation, the generation above, and he even went to the extent of fighting a smaller guy. Yeah, you ended up losing, but there's one thing that we could say about Oscar, he fought everybody. Question. It's almost like, how do you make that fight happen?
I don't want to cut you off, Henry, but real quick, before you answer, that's a great point, but then you can't, what if Chavez said, no, I'm not fighting you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to tarnish his legacy?
No, but you can't you cannot not also say he's the best Mexican national fighter of all time. Because if that's the case, if you want to pinpoint that, then it's Oscar.
But
then
Oscar's never
the only guy that has
he's
a sixth division champ. If you want to go through the numbers, let's go that way.
Sure.
But I take it back. You're a gringo.
Yeah, I'm a gringo, bro. So I'm no Mexican. I'm a gringo. No, it's.
But you see what I'm saying?
But
Oscar?
It's a debate. It's a debate that is.
No. But to get back to my question, I get all that. How do you make that fight happen? Because I don't feel like it has shit to do with money. Because Benavidez was willing to take $5 million to the $60 million.
No, it's not about money. Look, what I feel it is, I mean, he basically does not want to fight him. He's
scared.
Knows. He's not scared.
Come on, as a fighter, you can't say scared. That word, Henry.
I think he knows that he'll lose.
Mm.
Yeah. I think he knows that.
What is that? Come on. What is that?
I think so.
Yeah. Because when you look, I've learned over the years that when fighters outprice themselves, that's basically saying, I don't want to fight you. But look at the styles. I mean, you look at Canelo, right? And I promoted him for freaking 12 years, I think it was. He's been evolving and getting better and stronger. But now it's like, you can see it, you know, it's a little decline, whether it's his footwork, his injuries. I mean, what people don't know is that he's had several operations in his knees and his shoulders. And so it's all catching up to him. And you have this kid that's 26 years old, Benavidez, who's big as hell. He's not afraid to fight him, but he's maybe just afraid to lose.
Yeah. I understand that. But we can't go as far as start saying, oh, he's scared or this and that. Because he's paid his dues.
Just like
you paid your dues. You didn't have to fight some of the dudes towards the end of your career that you might, those losses that you took, you didn't have to fight those guys.
Right.
You were the gold. You were Oscar. You made money. Sure. You know, Canelo at the same time has made money. He has fought a lot of people. Just like Chavez. He was the guy at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't say he's scared. I do understand exactly what you're saying, though, because as a fighter, you do have to look deep inside yourself at one point and say,
but
is that a mountain I'm willing
Kamaru,
to climb?
The problem, too,
is that Canelo's holding all the titles.
He's holding everything hostage.
So it's like, okay, if you don't want to fight him, then let go of the titles.
Yeah.
Give somebody else a chance. You know, and people love seeing a fucking train wreck. Come on,
of course.
You know,
of course.
That's why he's a fiend for this fight right now.
People love seeing the changing of the guards. Yeah. You know, it happened with me. It happened with it happened when I fought Pacquiao.
Yeah.
It happened when I fought Mayweather.
Yeah.
It happened when
you fought De La Hoya. I mean, Chavez.
Yeah, it's the passing of the torch. Guard. The passing of the torch. People love seeing that, and you know, who's going to be the next guy to take over the reins? You know, to take over, get that crown. You know, and is it Benavidez? Is it Munguia who's fighting the 4th of May? People love watching that. So people get tired sometimes of heroes, and they want to see something new. You know, something fresh. It's like, I mean, I can't believe all these people are fucking against Canelo now. The fuck happened?
But Oscar, but it's that same reason is you fought everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
you fought everybody, not if Canelo rejects to fight this dude, which I feel like he's going that route, I don't think we're going to see that fight. Yeah. But look at what David Benavidez is doing. I'm willing to go up to 175 pounds and fight the winner of Bivol and Beterev.
Yeah.
Like, give me one of those dudes. Like, that, like, he's going to steal all the fans.
That's a good, that's a fighter, man. That's a, I mean, but he's a young fighter.
Yeah.
And he can say that, you know. Canelo's older. And he's kind of like, should I say that? Yeah. You know,
but where does it stop though? Where does it stop? You know this.
Until he gets beat.
Exactly.
But it's a mandatory. Exactly. It's mandatory.
No, that's what you're so thirsty for.
Yeah.
Of course, both of you guys have points.
I'm defending Canelo, dude. I'm trying to make this fight happen, dude.
I'm trying to make this happen.
Did this guy have a shot at Canelo in his room? What the fuck?
I wanted to fight the guy. I wanted that fight. I campaigned for that fight. No. Listen, I understand both of the points. Yeah, it sucks because you can't hold up all the belts.
Sure.
And allow, you know, and deprive this man of getting the position where he should be. But at the same time, when you're there at the top, you know, everybody wants to see this changing of the guard. And because we're also in a place of this is entertainment too.
It is. Yeah, we want to see a good fight.
Yeah, and if you don't do that, if you don't allow for that changing of the guard, you disrupt the market. You disrupt everything.
Yep.
Like George St. Pierre and Tyron Woodley in my division, George St. Pierre retired without fighting Tyron Woodley and giving him that chance to earn that title.
Okay.
So it was almost, I'm just going to be honest, for me, it was almost like Tyron Woodley's stint as a champion was blemished because it's like, we know who the real champion was.
You didn't beat
him and take the belt.
There's always a question mark.
There's always that question mark.
Yeah, but he's but look at it this way too. Canelo is also entertaining a fight with Terrence Crawford, a dude that's a welterweight at 147 pounds. But he's not going to fight a guy in his division that's mandatory. Yeah, that's
does that make more money?
No. Than Benavidez? No.
You don't think so?
No. Mexicans, bro. Like Mexicans buy pay per views.
Well, Mexicans don't buy that fight regardless.
Yeah, no, we steal it, bro. Come on. there's I think the biggest fight to make right now, it's Canelo Benavidez. It's the biggest fight. And who knows? Maybe Canelo saying that he wants $200 million is maybe not far-fetched. Because that fight can be huge.
Yeah,
it could be huge.
So he would just get 200 flat, no pay-per-view. All right, the prince of Saudi Arabia, the king of Saudi Arabia says, hey, let's make this fight happen.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe. Or maybe he takes the chance on Amazon because now Amazon's involved with boxing, which is huge.
Oh, really?
Netflix.
Yeah. Since when?
Somebody, Netflix is coming up too with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. All that good stuff. So, it's a big money grab right now, man. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. Moving on to Terrence Crawford, man, like the pound for pound king.
Yeah.
You know, what storylines, what big fights are, you know, that he could potentially fight that are big numbers? I mean, does a guy, because obviously he can scrap, dude. Terrence Crawford can fight right-handed, left-handed.
Yeah,
dude, to me, like in his prime, he beats Mayweather.
Yeah, he's a beautiful boxer.
Yeah, beautiful, strong, and he can crack. Like Mayweather was super good defensively. You know, good countering.
Sure.
But I don't think he really brought that pop, power.
You're
that
saying
pop
Crawford like beats Crawford. Mayweather.
Yeah. And his prime,
it's an interesting fight.
Come on.
I think so.
It's an interesting fight.
Yes, it is an interesting fight.
Oscar, am I far-fetched? Am I hating, dude? Am I just telling the truth?
Oscar, you are the gold standard. You understand.
Right.
You understand how much that defensive style can really take a fight. A fight out of you.
Does he beat the bronze medalist? Oscar.
Wow.
Bronze medalist,
Wow, Floyd.
You like that one, Oscar?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Man, when I saw Crawford and Spence.
It's a different level.
Wow. Yeah. What a master performance, you know? And ballsy, too, because, see, the thing with Mayweather, he's a master defensive boxer. Master. Okay, and he knows how to pick his shots, and he'll make you frustrated. He'll frustrate you to a point where you're gonna make mistakes. So the question would have been, does Crawford get frustrated and make mistakes? You know, because offensively, I think Crawford was a better offensive fighter. You know, he would throw more punches, combinations, so he had a better chance of landing, you know. But Mayweather was just like a 1-2 type of puncher, you know, with whether it was a right hand or a check hook. Yeah, who knows? It's a debate because Mayweather has a perfect defensive style and then the offense, and who knows who would have gotten frustrated faster, you know? Yeah, interesting fight, man. Interesting fight.
Now, you're with all of your life experiences and everything that you've been through and dealt with, and also being a Mexican American, you're put in a place now to where you have this ability to not only pass on your knowledge to your children, but also to up and coming boxers, up and coming combat athletes and fighters that look up to you, who want to get to the level that you've reached. And then you have this young kid, Ryan Garcia, who you signed.
I was with him yesterday.
Yeah, who in a lot of ways reminds me a lot like you. You know, he's got the look like you did.
Does he have the hook?
The right hand?
It's
debatable. That hook. I think his hook might be faster, but
I think it is
faster.
Man.
But yours set people down.
Yeah.
You know, and so. How is that relationship? How are you pouring into him to make sure to help him out, not make the same mistake?
Oh, no, we're good. We're actually good. Look, a lot of times when this was going on with Ryan, these recent, what he was saying on Instagram and Twitter, and like I'm not there with him every single day. I don't know what the hell's going on. Yeah. Like I'm just here to promote a fight. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a babysitter. I'm not, it's been an up and down relationship, you know, with, cause he's his own person. Like I'm his promoter, but he's like, he calls his shots. Like if he wants to fight, he'll fight. And one thing that I do respect about Ryan is that he does want to be legendary. He does want to fight the best. I mean, he fought Tank.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after a loss like that, he comes and fights this kid, Oscar Duarte, who was a tough kid, tough as nails, beats him, and now he's going to fight Devin Haney. Nobody's doing that in boxing. Nobody's fighting the best back-to-back-to-back, whatever. But I have to respect him for that. But, we've had our ups and downs. We're good now. We're good now, yeah.
I feel, Oscar, that he's been in our position before. Like, he's ended up, because you know what I mean? He's talking about buttholes being tickled, weed, and then Jesus all in the same sentence. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I think...
I don't know what position you've been in. Hey, I don't know what position you've been in.
But what I'm trying to say, Oscar, is he's in a place where I don't think he really knows how to handle pressure. You know, the reason why I say is because people, dude, I follow him. You know, we chatted before on social media. It's almost like there's that pressure that's on him that he's kind of like, there's a reason why, man, the Barclays Center is empty. And it's not,
it is selling.
I'm sure, of course. But what I'm,
it'll be a sellout crowd.
Yeah. If Ryan shows up, you know what I'm saying?
He will. I was with him yesterday and, during, you know, the training day or whatever, media, he looks like a beast. He really does. He's growing into his man strength.
Yeah.
He's looking good, man. When he tells me, "You watch, I'm gonna knock him out," I actually believe him. Yeah. I don't know if it's an act. I don't know if he's like just trying to, but I actually believe him. And I'm sure he has all those pressures too, man. Like when I was growing up and, you know, when we were growing up, I'm sure he has all those pressures too. And, but I see him angry right now. I see him like, he just doesn't give a shit. He wants to go up there and just fight. Like that's the ring, the octagon. That's our escape, man. Yeah. It's crazy, right?
In a sense, I feel like he's also, because he has been, you know, like you were going up against Chavez. He has been kind of you're not that good. You just got a left hook. That's it. You can't fight a whole fight. Mm-hmm. And I also thought his last performance was beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful fight. Well. You know, and it says a lot about him where he's willing to pick up and move and go to Dallas and work. I mean, shout out to Derek James. Is he working with him this fight?
Oh, yeah, yeah, Derek James.
Shout out to Derek James. I mean, excellent coach. I had a chance to work with him a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And he feels that. You know, every time now I've seen him a few times, and he's got that chip on his shoulder to wear weight.
Oh, he does, man. Yeah. He does. You know, being pretty as a fighter, it's a fucking tough task to take. you know what I'm saying? No, because it's like, no, it's pretty interesting because it's happening with Ryan too. Like, they don't respect him. His face is too pretty. Come on. How can you be a beast? You know, you can't fight. Come on. And so he has to prove to him, to everybody, like, you know, go that extra mile and have that chip on his shoulder and be tough and talk all this shit, you know. Like, you don't really have to do that, bro. Just do your job in the ring, you know?
Yeah. How is that? Let's tell Henry, how is that to be a great fighter and also be a sex symbol too. You know? Hey!
Oh, he doesn't know. Huh?
No, what that feels like.
Fuck, dude, I fucking 5'4", stocky.
God damn.
Big head, fine, dude. Usher, you got the gifts, bro.
Bro, man, I'm telling you, I trained up in the mountains for 18 years of my career up in Big Bear. Not to get away from, you know, the whole, you know, scene and media and this. No, I got away because of the women. Yeah. Like, literally back in the day, man, women would, like, chase me.
Yeah.
It was freaking crazy, man. It was nuts. So I would seclude myself up in the mountains. And I would have a whole team just to keep the women away, you know. It was crazy, and I'm sure Ryan's going through it now too.
Yeah, but you know? And imagine being in this time, day and age where they have access to you.
Oh yeah,
they don't have to chase you.
Sure.
Fault your car driving away.
Slip in a DM, and
they have access to you right here at their fingertips.
Crazy.
Imagine how dangerous that would have been.
Oh man,
like you had fun.
I'm glad I didn't have social media back then. Yeah, I would be in trouble.
Oh my goodness,
because it was so easy.
Yeah, you know?
It would have been so easy, but. I mean, it's everything changes, man. Times change. And, you know, I think there's more pressure now because of social media, you know, because it's so accessible.
It's more of a, I like to compare it as more of, now it's more of a mental pressure because it's all here. Yeah, you might not be able to see, feel, and touch what's going on right in front of you.
Yeah.
But it's all here. It's worse. In your face. Yes.
Which is even worse because you read a bad comment.
Yeah.
And you want to fuck it. Oh, you want to fuck it.
Yeah. You want to.
It might be a bot.
Find that person.
It might be a fucking bot.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
Yeah. And you. Bot. We all know. We all know.
I mean,
what
I got fucking thousands of bots, man, on my shit. I write something and here come the bots.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What's the future of boxing and what's your vision of it? Like, where is it that you would want to take the sport? I saw the face-off that you had with Eddie Hearn, and I thought that was super cool. You guys were able to kind of talk about each other's differences.
No, I want to work with everybody, man. But at one point, look, what I'm doing, like I promoted Pacquiao and Mayweather. I promoted 12 fights of Mayweather's 12 fights. I promoted Canelo's career, now Ryan, like. We have a formula, we have a system, and, you know, and it helps that you have somebody like me, you know, that's pushing the young fighter, you know, and opening some doors, you know, but ultimately the fighter has to perform in the ring. That's how you get popular. But, I'm just going to keep chipping away, man, just doing what I'm doing. And I'm not going to say that I'm going to, you know, consolidate the sport of boxing, excuse me. Because it's impossible.
Yeah.
Because you can have everything under one roof, right? Like the UFC. But then one promoter who can get a license, he can find the next great athlete and sign him up. And guess what? Now he has the power.
Yeah.
Now he can go and, you know, fight him somewhere else. And, you know, so it's just so fragmented, man. It's I don't think there's a cure for it. I really don't.
I think what we have to do, what we must do as promoters, is just work together. Because we've done shows now. Like, we're doing this show with Canelo and Munguia. I'm doing it with Al Heyman, who's a promoter, and we're doing it with a different network. Because I'm with DAZN, and then they're with Amazon. So we're working together. That's just the way to do it. Work together.
Yeah,
that's basically it.
I want to, you know, that's, of course, that, you know, answer that and away from the sport, you know, because you're so much bigger than just the sport. You know, I want to real quick just touch on this a little bit, which is your family life. You know, you're because I watching your documentary towards the end, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, I was on the plane and I was tearing up a little bit because I am a father. He is a father.
Sure.
And I was tearing up a little bit, making sure the person next to me was watching me. But
I got something in my eye.
Yeah, so what as a father, obviously, like he just touched on with how you're understanding, you know, trying to understand your mom's position.
Sure.
Is what would you want to say to your children and them? Because now they're grown. They're growing up.
Yeah, yeah. I got three older ones and three younger ones. Yeah.
And so they're going to get to a position to where they're going to be, you know, our age and your age of enlightenment and look back. What would you want them to understand?
Yeah.
What would you want to say?
Well, I mean, first of all, thank God for their moms. Yes. You know?
Like, you always pick good. You always pick good for the most part.
Seriously. Because, I mean, I was doing my thing. I was, was I there? Yeah, okay, you know. But, you know, I got to train. I got to fight. I have my own life. You know, that this
selfish lifestyle.
Selfish, exactly. And time flies, you know. And next thing you know it, they're fucking 25 years old. And you wish that they just turn out to be great kids, you know? And I got lucky. I really did. Not because of me. I mean, not because I was the, you know, authority, or I was the voice, or I was the one who was responsible. Or no, thank God for their moms, seriously. And thank God they all turned out, you know, to be good kids. What I would tell them is, you know, hey, just don't lose your identity. Believe in yourself, you know. That's basically it, you know. Believe in yourself. Don't let anybody tell you what to do. Don't let anybody tell you, you know, how to do it. Believe in yourself. Believe in your abilities. Believe in your mind, your heart. You know, it's... 'cause I sure can't tell them, like, you know, I can't tell them what to do. I don't have that authority, you know, because I wasn't their mom. I wasn't there every single day, you know. But I can give them advice as an adult, you know, and just kind of help them out and be there for them. Because I will be there for them every single day of my life. Yeah. If they pick up the phone and call me, and or I call them, it's like, yeah, we have a great relationship. But it's like the best advice I can give them is, you know, just be true to yourself. Yeah, find yourself.
And you watching that doc, there's a scene towards the end of it when you're at the fights. I think you were at the fights with them.
Yeah.
And someone was fighting, I don't know who it was, you know, the camera was on you and them. And it's where you were shadow boxing in slow-mo. I was like, damn, he still got it, you know. but you know, when you see like a scene like that, that was powerful. That really moved me, that right there, because it's at the end of the day, life is about, you know, when you really scale it down to its simplest form, it's about memories. It's about the moments you made all throughout. It's about the journey.
Yeah.
All that, those memories, when you look at them and you try to see life through their eyes, and then their memory of you is, how would you want them to remember that memory?
That the memory would be that, that dad was always there and will be there, you know, in his own way, you know. My training camps were 3 months at a time. You know, you miss all these like birthdays, and you miss all this time, you know, the school and going, you know, being with them in important moments, you know. I mean, back then we didn't have like cell phones and shit, you know, and to communicate or whatever. I would go off to the mountains and stuff, but they always knew that they can always count on me, you know, and that was very important to me because of how I lived in my past with my parents. I didn't know I had parents. I didn't know I had somebody I can talk to. So I make sure that these kids know that, hey, whenever you need to talk to me, whenever you have to get a hold of me, I'm here for you. I'm your father. I can give you advice. And they know that for a fact. So that's very, very important to me.
Yeah, I think, Oscar, you know, I just want to give you your flowers, man. I hope through this documentary, first of all, since I was a kid, you know, whether it was a lie or whatnot, the way you've always carried yourself, it inspired us.
Yeah.
Not just me, but, you know, every other Mexican-American, gringo, whatever it is that you want to call it, so that's a fan of combat sports.
Sure.
And I just hope that your family understands you through the documentary, that they don't judge you, and that they're able to see it through your lens.
Well, most of them don't talk to me, so.
Yeah, but I think...
because I was real.
Because
you know?
You aired it. You aired it.
Yeah, you aired it, and I think you're at peace now. And I think, you know, you carried your cross, and they have to carry theirs. And I hope that they understand because, you know, everybody's story is a little bit different.
It's all different, man. It's all different. It's all a struggle.
So I just want to say, Oscar... Before we go,
yes.
Gracias.
You got it, brother.
To another gringo. Te queremos un chingo, Oscar.
Thank you, brother.
I want to say before we go, I want to say to you, is there a world where we get you and Dana to actually have a sit down?
I would love to.
You guys are phenomenal human beings.
Seriously?
Tomorrow be the peacemaker.
Dana White, where are you?
Dana.
You know what's crazy? I remember this one time we were in New York. We were doing upfronts. I think this is when he was pitching the UFC. This is back in the day. Yeah. He was pitching UFC. I think it was to Fox or somebody. And we were cool. He was like, man, oh, man, big fan. And we were like super cool, super nice, everything. Yeah. And I mean, it was just that one. Look, he loves the UFC so much. That's his baby.
Just like you love
him. And boxing. So when I critiqued that fight with Mayweather and Connor, he just went ballistic and rightfully so, and I understand it, you know, and I might have said things that were uncalled for, and I'm sure he did too. But look, I have nothing against him. If he were sitting down right here today, I would literally just give him a handshake, hug, you know, hey, let's say it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are very, very important men. You know, not just to your household and to life, but to the lives that you guys are continuing to change by giving us the opportunities that we have, you know, and he's dealt with his problems, his things. Sure. You've dealt with your fair share. And I think, Dana, we're going to do another one.
Come on now.
You and Oscar, we got to definitely sit down.
I would love to sit down with him and have some kind of debate. One-on-one. Even debate, just a...
We should. You guys are the head of these combat sports, you know, definitely. You know, before we go, man, once again, we love you. We cherish you.
Thank you, bro.
I remember watching your fights growing up. Everybody knew who Oscar De La Hoya was. Yeah. And you made your mark as an athlete in this world. And I think it's also important that when you leave it, you make your mark as a human, the best you can.
Absolutely.
And I think you're well on your way
to
do that. So,
appreciate you.
You know, for myself, I'm the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, ooh, a.k.a. Triple C.
We just had, you know.
The golden legend, boy.
The golden boy, Oscar De La Hoya. And we are out. Yo, my man, we just had the legend, Mr. Oscar De La Hoya. It's a crazy time we're living in right now, Henry. We're getting to, and hopefully in 20 years, we're able to sit with young men and women that let us know the impact and that we had on them. But we're getting to sit with legends now and tell them how much they meant to us.
Yeah,
and how great they were.
Yeah, for sure, Kamaru. I mean, Oscar De La Hoya, first sixth division champion boxing history, Olympic gold medalist. I mean, he only had 5 losses in his amateur career. You know, for those who haven't seen his documentary, we both saw it, all our producers, everybody has seen it. I mean, this guy talks about it all, from him being molested as a kid to the abuse of his mother, to him, you know, following a storyline, a narrative that wasn't true, that he won the gold medal and it was a promise that he made to his mother. I mean, it was pretty much a tell-all. But then, like, being here and actually witnessing and witnessing firsthand, like, live and hearing it come from his mouth, just like, shit. Like Kamaru, like, we grew up watching this dude scrap, and particularly the Mexican Americas. Like, it's like Oscar De La Hoya is like freaking, you know what I mean? Like, he's the version of what you would say he's, you know, he represented all of us.
Yeah.
So I think a guy like Oscar, I can tell, like, from the interview, and you mentioned it here when he came in, there's a freeness
yes,
to him.
Yes. Yes.
And I can tell you something, Kamaru. The first time that I did an interview with him and Mike Tyson, like, he was jittery. Like, he was like, there was like a tightness to him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The first time that I went out with him back in 08, when I recently won the Olympics, man, I was like, there's a tightness to him.
Of course, because you're still living up to this persona that you have to carry. You have this risk. And I said that you when you get to a certain level, you have this responsibility that you don't necessarily ask for. It's placed upon you that, because now you are an influencer in a sense. You influence culture, you influence lives, you influence these young men and women who want to be as extraordinary as you are. And so you have that responsibility placed upon you to where you have to pay it forward. You have to. With great power comes great responsibility. I'm a firm believer in that. And you have to show these young men and women that who might feel like, okay, I want to just give up on myself and anything that's hard that's going to improve my life in a good way, I'm going to give up on that. You know, so it's like you motivating them that, hey, if you follow this path or at least try, you can get here. But I love what you said. I love where he's at now, because Oscar is 51, about to be 52. Mm-hmm. He has maybe 20 summers left. Maybe 25, maybe 50, who knows. But think about that. Think how fast time is. Yeah, summer. It was like summer last time.
I'll be honest with you, Kamaru. I kind of don't like that analogy, man.
I don't either. I don't either. But I'm a realist, and I like it to make sense to me. I like it to be real for me. 20 summers left for you to look at everything that you've done, all the pain you've suffered, everything you've felt in this world, all the things you've achieved. 20 summers and it's gone.
Yeah. I think in particularly, like, Oscar's life, like, he's lived so much, man, like a love-hate relationship, not just with the sport of boxing, but even with his parents.
That's like, true. You know, and what I was saying is, it was with him, the freedom he has now. Now I feel like he's really living. When you first met him, you felt that tightness because he's still carrying these things around. I can't really show who I am. I can't show what I like. I can't do what I necessarily want to do
Because of what, though?
Because of the responsibility.
Yeah. The responsibility and the pressure that it brings. I mean, Oscar has lived so many kind of lifetimes, man. From, I go back to, you know, him, you know, the abuse, the sexual abuse, the fake narrative with his, you know, with him winning the gold medal, his mom dying of cancer. Like, it's almost like Oscar was somewhat of a victim of his past, but he was able to create the sport of boxing as a safe haven for him, where he was able to win a fucking gold medal. You know how hard that shit is?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's when you know you're a real world champion, dude. And when you can be like, hey, I've gone through a 32-man bracket, a 16-man bracket for the Olympics. I didn't know who I was going to box the next match. But I was able to be the best on that day. And I think looking back at Oscar's story, it's like, yeah, man, he was not only a boxer, but he was a fucking somewhat of a sex symbol. I mean, he was, but throughout everything and all the success that he went through, there was confusion.
Of course. And that's what's so real about it. And that I love about that. And even in him now, you know, being a businessman, being a promoter, It's something that when we spoke with Dana White talked about a little bit of that what most champions tell him once they lose the belt is that sense of relief that they feel. And with Oscar, it's, I'm living now. I'm living the way, on his term, the way he wants to live, which people can say whatever they want to say, but guess what? They're all bystanders on the sidelines talking.
Yeah,
they don't live the life that he lived. They haven't experienced what he's experienced. And you know, I'm grateful that we got the chance to be able to speak with him, to be able to dig a little bit more into him. And you know, the one question I didn't get to ask him that I wanted to, but I feel like I know the answer to this, is would he take anything back?
Yeah. I think he'd go back, and you think of, because, you know, there's been so many people that have had success at a very young age. And they asked Michael Jackson that same question, that said, Michael, you know, would you take back everything that you have now to return to your childhood? And ironic, you know what his answer was?
What?
No.
Of course.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Like, because he, and that's something that he's always cried. I never had a childhood. I didn't have that. And he probably went through the same stages as Oscar did. But when they asked him, and he said, I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, what the impact that he was able to make across the world with his music, and I think Oscar's somewhat of the same thing. Now, the only thing that I will add, and it's unfortunate, is him as a father, and he'll tell you, I was just never there. And I think now the past kind of hurts, but I think even now with his kids that are older, I think through that documentary that we saw, like The Golden Boy, and if you guys haven't watched it, watch it. It's on HBO Max, freaking one of the best documentaries you'll ever see. I hope his kids are able to see those lenses through his eyes.
Yeah, that's very, very important. And the comparison to that is, we're talking to legends that have been legends in their particular field and what they do. And I think a big reason why they might say no, they wouldn't take anything back, is because once you are at that status, you get to that level, you understand what work that it took to get there. You understand that. And also now I've come to a halt. I've come to a place of enlightenment to where I can look back and say, that trauma drove me in a way that helped fuel me to get to this point. Without that trauma, would I have gotten to this point? Maybe not. I wouldn't take anything back, because you don't know. Now you're dealing with the unknown. Why do I want to go back and relive the unknown?
Yeah.
I know that that trauma, as bad as it was or as good as it was, fueled me to get to this point.
Yeah. Anything really surprised you, Kamaru? Or like anything that really kind of stood out? Like,
dude? I think for me, it's like I said, I'm in a place of really enlightenment, you know, to where I'm starting to see these guys and these men and women and understand that they are human. When at one point they weren't human to us. Oscar De La Hoya, did you ever think Oscar was human? You watched him on television. You watch the planes. You watch the cars. That's not human. Oh, my God. He's a god. Oh, my God. He's larger than life. You know, to where we're now.
And being good looking. I can scrap. Yeah. Don't give me those powers.
Yeah. You know, these guys were larger than life. And how blessed we are, man, to be able to have lived a life worthy enough to actually get to sit and talk to these individuals. So, man, it was a fantastic interview. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, no, and, for sure.
I think, we got to get him and Dana to have a sit down.
Man, you're going to get a Nobel Peace Prize. Dude. First, hey, you're trying to get Francis Ngannou to link up with the UFC.
I'm going to get that done. And definitely Oscar and Dana sit down, because, I mean, two people that we respect so much, two powerful, two influential men. And that's the one thing I think about the elite of the elite, is they're able to, I don't care whatever it is, we're able to understand each other for what benefits the greater good. And I think both of them, I think at some point they will understand that, and they can't sit and talk. So that is our mission. That is our mission. Let's freaking make that happen.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely on. I mean, I think one thing that really came to mind too, Kamaru, is for him to be, imagine a son, for him to be able to say, I hated her. Like, he hated his mom. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the shit that, like you talk about, I didn't like her. I didn't, like, I was abused every day, and I fucking hated her. Like, that came out of his mouth. I'm just like, golly. I mean, talk about the life and maybe the hell that he was probably living. And how is it now that he's able to really forgive her? And the other thing too, man, is like his family. His family, he said it at the end. I kind of, you know, we kind of run out of time, and I didn't want to continue to keep beating the dead horse, but they're not talking to him.
Yeah, but you're still living in a place of, bro, you think of all the honor that Oscar brought them to where we're from. We're immigrants from the hood to where immigrants, especially in this country, are looked at, second class citizens. You know, think of the honor and the place value that Oscar put them in, the De La Hoya families. Now, Oscar is really, you know, because he lived it. So for him, it's different to where you're Henry Cejudo. Your sister's treated differently because you're Henry Cejudo's sister. And now, as Henry Cejudo, you're like, I hated my mom. I didn't really like this home situation. They're going to feel some type of way about that. Because now they feel like you're kind of degrading the name that you've raised up so high to them. But, you know, and it's just a mentality to where we got to get out of, because it's, you know, they didn't live what you lived. They didn't live the highs and the lows and the, you know, they didn't enjoy the parties you enjoy. They didn't enjoy the spoils necessarily in a certain type of way that you did. So they don't understand that.
Yeah, so it's almost like what he said, Kamara, he's like, it's almost like his mom like hit it. Like, you understand, like, something, but she kind of like hid it from the older brother and the younger sister. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm going to pinpoint this motherfucker right here, and I'm going to let him have it. I'm going to let some of my trauma that maybe happened to me and give it to him.
True, but he's a middle child as well. So, and I think as a middle child, we compartmentalize the I guess, lack thereof of the responsibility or the nurturing love. The abundance of the lack of abundance of those two things, we kind of compartmentalize that as they hated me, or they don't like me, you know, or they feel this way about me. No one cares about me, you know. We can't. That's what we do. Cause I told him there was at one point where I told my mom, why? What about me? What about me?
Are you the middle child?
Yeah,
you are. Oh child. Shit! Yeah.
And I think it. Yeah, and I think it's something that pushes you to be. As independent, it pushes you to, that drives you to go find something that's yours so you can show them, like, look, you should have loved me more. You should have gave me more. You should have given me more responsibility. You should have looked at me a different way because, look, you gave him all that responsibility and, look, he didn't. He's not as great as I am. You showed her all that or him all that love, the baby, and they're not as big as I am. Look what I did for the family name. A piece of you is, you know, you compartmentalize that as, okay, screw it. I'm by myself. I'm going to go get this. I'm going to show them. And that is a big driving force, too. It's a big driving force. And a lot of middle child will tell you that they felt.
I mean, maybe not to that extreme, Kamaru, but.
Maybe not to the extreme, but.
Maybe they, not. Because.
But they will. But compartmentalize
you felt that. You felt that, too, as the middle child.
Yeah. At one point, I was just like, oh, man, wow. They don't really, why? I don't get the same amount of responsibility as him, the olders. Why I'm not coddled the same way as my youngest. But now you ask me, would I change anything? No, absolutely not. Because that gave me a certain type of hunger to be as independent and as strong as I am. So, you know, I loved it. And man, we just talked to another legend, bro.
Yeah,
we out here running.
We on a roll, man. Pound for pound is taking over, Kamaru.
Yes, absolutely. And guys, you know, go to our YouTube. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment if you want. Better be nice. Comment. Because I'm going to send this guy after you guys. So, you know, and I am the Nigerian Nightmare.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
Yeah.